Support for WPR comes from 4imprint, providers of promotional products for businesses, including embroidered apparel, trade show items, and logoed business gifts. More is at 4imprint.com. 4imprint, for certain.
Support for WPR comes from The Alliance, a not-for-profit cooperative that contracts with over 39,000 healthcare providers on its employers' behalf to help them access healthcare. The-Alliance.org.
Callum Borchers is with us from the Washington Post, looking at the week's top news in national politics. Callum, I want to turn to this story of Sam Nunberg, a former Trump campaign staffer. He was in the news initially for saying he was going to defy a subpoena from special counsel Robert Mueller. Then he did this series of TV interviews. Here's a little bit of his many interviews. Here he is talking to MSNBC's Ari Melber.
They're not going to send me to jail. You know what, Mr. Mueller, if he wants to send me to jail, he can send me to jail. And then I'll laugh about it. And I'll make a bigger spectacle than I am on your TV show right now.
Well, sir, I don't know.
So a lot of spectacle. Talk about who Sam Nunberg is and what happened over the last couple of days, Callum. It was weird.
It was weird and perhaps a little bit sad. I think that was sort of what made people uncomfortable watching some of those interviews. But as to who he is, Sam Nunberg may not be a household name because he sort of left a Trump world in an official capacity fairly early in the campaign. He was hired and fired by the Trump campaign several times in 2015 in the early days of the Trump campaign and later ended up locked in a lawsuit when the president accused him of breaching his confidentiality agreement because he had made critical remarks in interviews. So there's some tension there, which sort of made his statements that he wasn't going to comply with the special counsel confusing, right? It was sort of like, well, why, you know, if you've been a Trump critic, why are you going to make life hard on Robert Mueller? But he said he was looking to protect Roger Stone, who is a longtime political operative. He now spends some time working for the conspiracy theory website InfoWars, but he describes Roger Stone as being something like a surrogate father and that he felt like Mueller was perhaps building a perjury case against Stone and he wasn't going to have anything to do with it. But the interviews on live TV at the beginning of the week were sort of bizarre to watch, just in the way that he spoke so flippantly about the prospect of going to jail for contempt of court. And then you had sort of late in the evening on CNN where an anchor who's sitting right across from him says, "I can smell alcohol on your breath." And it sort of just added this bit of evidence to what had been sort of low simmering speculation during the day that perhaps he wasn't in full control of his faculties during these interviews. And so then the next day you had a Fox Business reporter who says he's a friend of Sam Nunberg's, kind of confirmed that idea and say, listen, he's going to check himself into rehab and you know, kind of get the help that he needs.
There were a couple sides as people looked at whether he should have been on all these interviews. The political side saying, yeah, he's a target of he's involved in the investigation. There's a subpoena looking for evidence that he may have. And then in these interviews, he's giving hints that, yeah, maybe Mueller has something on the president, on other people. So there's news value. But then people are a little uncomfortable thinking, if this guy is not in his right mind, if he's drunk, if he's not able to consent properly to do these interviews, should we keep putting him on the air?
Yeah, it was really an ethical dilemma. There's nothing clearly in the journalist's handbook for how you handle a situation like this. And I was struck by the very dramatically different answers that you would get. You know, I could call up a journalism ethics expert at Columbia and say, what do you think? And he would say, well, it's not a reporter's job to protect a grown-up from himself, and he's a public figure. And even if he was drunk on the air, that's a decision he made. And by the way, it's inherently newsworthy that the president of the United States would have chosen to surround himself with someone like that as an advisor in the first place. So take that one point on one hand, and then I can call up, you know, the dean of the graduate school at Berkeley, and he can tell me something totally different and say, you know, I don't think it was ethical. I think that, there is a responsibility for journalists to consider whether this is a person who is, fully able to make decisions for himself. And I had people take sort of a middle ground and say maybe, you know, the right thing to do from a TV perspective would have been to pre-tape, you know, an interview with him and not go live on television. And then, you know, if things seem to go off the rails, you could perhaps not show the spectacle, you know, not sort of give the audience the idea that you're really just trying to put a circus on TV, but that if he did say something of news value, that you could share just that little bit of it. It was a really interesting episode this week that very much divided reporters because, like I said, there's really just no playbook for this.
Talking to Callum Borchers from The Washington Post, looking at some of the top stories this week in national politics. Also this week, the Office of Special Counsel, which is not the Robert Mueller thing. It's a different thing. It's not the Russia investigation. Anyhow, the Office of Special Counsel said that White House advisor Kellyanne Conway had run afoul of some ethics laws. What are they talking about?
Well, they're talking about the Hatch Act, which we've heard with increasing frequency because Kellyanne Conway is not the only administration official this year who has been questioned about whether she is in violation. What the Hatch Act basically states is that, except for the president, he gets an exception, but that other government officials should not be using their official government offices, resources, and purchase to advocate for or against people in political races. And that's what Kellyanne Conway did on a couple of occasions when she was on CNN or Fox News, essentially urging voters that Doug Jones, the Democratic Senate candidate in Alabama, would not be the right choice to make, although she didn't explicitly say, don't vote for him and vote for Roy Moore. And that's been the White House's contention. They're really parsing words here on this one and saying, well, she didn't literally say the words, go vote for Roy Moore. She was simply explaining to voters why the president preferred Roy Moore over Doug Jones. It's seemingly a distinction without a difference, and certainly, as you've said, the Office of Special Counsel didn't buy it.
So the Office of the Special Counsel, again, not the Robert Mueller thing, said she had violated ethics laws. Who does anything about that? Is there some kind of consequence to this?
Seemingly not. You know, she may get a slap on the wrist. You remember we saw a similar episode play out again with Kellyanne Conway earlier in the Trump administration when she was, I believe, on Fox and Friends, and she urged viewers to go out and buy Ivanka's stuff. Remember, she was referring to the merchandise line of the president's daughter. That wasn't a Hatch Act violation. It wasn't political speech. But again, she was sort of using her public office to promote a private enterprise in that way. And the White House just basically gave her a slap on the wrist. You know, they said, well, we've had our attorney, our White House attorneys have talked to her about that. It won't happen again. And that would seem to be, at the most, what we're going to get this time around, although the White House isn't even prepared to concede that she really did violate the Hatch Act. So in any case, it looks like she's going to really get off scot-free here. And so the broader implication is that this is a White House that really just doesn't care very much if its officials run afoul of the Hatch Act.
And then speaking of the use of offices, the Congressional Black Caucus asked the House Ethics Committee to review the practice of lawmakers sleeping in their offices. This is something that a lot of lawmakers apparently do. It was a big thing. Paul Ryan, when he went into office, did this. What's the complaint here?
Well, the complaint basically is that they're essentially taking free rent. You know, they're not renting apartments for themselves on or around Capitol Hill. They're just bunking in their offices as if that's a dormitory. And so that's one complaint. The other complaint from some lawmakers that it's just kind of gross and unsanitary, that, you know, that you're inviting, lobbyists and other constituents to come into your office for these professional meetings in what should be an office setting, and it's, basically doubling as the place where you sleep. And there is also some concern about, could there be some abuse of power there if you have aides and you're just sort of rolling out of bed in, you know, whatever state of semi-dress. There's no specific incident that someone can point to. But these are among the concerns that these Democrats have raised and said, look, it's just not appropriate. This is not what the office is for. It's supposed to be an office. And if you are going to spend time in Washington as a lawmaker, then you need to get yourself an apartment.
And what do the Congress people who do sleep in their offices say about why they do it?
Well, they've essentially said that it's the exact opposite. So far from being a taxpayer racket, where you know we're taking free rent to live in this place, you know, we are better able to serve you, the taxpaying public, because think about how efficient we can be. You mentioned Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House. You know, he's talked about this habit in interviews in the past and said, look, you know, I work most nights until 11:30 at night, and then he just, you know, wheels out the cot that's in his office. He lies down, and then he just rolls out of bed in the morning, and he goes right back to work, and there's no lost time for the commute or anything like that. So that's sort of the sell, is like, yes, I'm taking free rent, but I'm doing it so that I'm better able to serve you.
Callum, at no point in my career at Wisconsin Public Radio have I had to sleep in my office. Is that how things work at the Washington Post?
No. And you know, some of these tech firms, right? Remember, we've all heard about the nap pods. And so there was, remember that joke when Jeff Bezos bought the Post, were we suddenly going to have like nap pods or, you know, sleeping spaces here at the Post? But that has not come to fruition. There is no sleepovers at the Washington Post. And I think that most journalists, even though they may put in long hours, we do go home at night to our own apartments.
We'll leave it there. Callum, thanks a lot for joining us.
Glad to be with you.
That's Callum Borchers. He covers the intersection of media and politics for The Fix at The Washington Post. He was with us for a weekly roundup of national news.